ויהי בימי אחשוורוש, הוא אחשוורוש המולך מהודו ועד כוש 27 ומי המדינה. And so it was in the days of אחשוורוש, the very אחשוורוש that was המולך, it's not the way we would normally say it. We would say שמלך מהודו ועד כוש. It isn't ruled. מולך is in the process of becoming king or making himself king. And indeed Chazal view it that way. Because of this, we are given a key to understanding the entire Megillah, as we'll see. From Hodu all the way to Kush, which may be from Hodu, from India, all the way to Ethiopia, which was indeed the extent of the empire. Or according to another man, the Amar de Gemara, it's a reference to Hindu Kush, in which case it's right next to India. And Kishem Shemalach Mehodu Ad Kush, Kach Malach Al Kol Olam Kulo. Which is curious, because the fact is we till today use those words in exactly the same way. We have the Kush, which is India, and we have the Kush, which is Ethiopia. But that actually does represent the furthest extremes of the empire, the Persian Empire. Sheva v'yasrim umeya medina. 127 medinot. Now, in giving us this particular context, we're being given also a number of very, very important clues as to what is happening. And the context turns out to be important in establishing what the Megillah is all about. So first of all, Chazal tells us, Vayhi is the standard opening for Tzoras. Vayhi, there were problems. But as the Maharal explains, Vayhi is called problems, not just because it's a play on the sound of the words, Oy Vey, and He, which is also in Hebrew a sound of pain, but also because it's the context that is always present in process. So vayi is also the word for process, in the course of vayi. So it was as such and such was becoming. Therefore, since by definition process is always an attempt to get somewhere where you aren't, there is bound to be trouble, because there's an implication of something missing at the beginning and the changes that are necessary to achieve what needs to be there in the end, and that's always a painful transition, which is why vayi as a transitional stage is also a play on vai and he. But that means that this was a transitional period, and it was a period that was characterized by an Achashverosh that had two identities. The Yemei Achashverosh, the Achashverosh who was, as the Gemara says, actually a Hediot, that was not really the king Achashverosh. You know, let's say HaMelech Achashverosh, Shemalach Miodu Ve'atkush. We don't call him HaMelech Achashverosh. We call him Achashverosh the way we would refer to a regular commoner, as if it's his first name. Hu Achashverosh HaMolech, and that was indeed the commoner Achashverosh, what he understands it, that brought himself to be Molech, so that he was not actually meant to be the Melech. And in fact, if we do identify Chashrash Chashverosh with Xerxes, then that's exactly what happened, because he was not the one that was expected to be Molech after Daryovesh. He actually, nobody knows precisely why, but the documents that present him as the Melech refer to him as the younger son who was nonetheless chosen to be the king and the most suitable for a kingdom. But the other inyan of HaMolech is that it is an ongoing process of being Molech. So as the Gemara puts it, Shemalach Me'atzmo, HaMolech, who made himself king. So that on a simple level, what that means is that there were all types of political manipulations. There is, the Gemara brings, financial manipulations that were involved in securing the Malchut for himself. Or, as we'll see, the analysis of Sheva v'Yasrim u'Me'ah represents a gradual kivush of the Malchut, first taking over 7, then taking over 20, then taking over, utilizing the population resources of those to take the remaining 100. But it also refers to HaMolech as being an ongoing process of making himself king. And as we're going to see in the Megillah, that is almost the definition of a politician. And that's exactly what, this is really the first time in history that we have the record of king as politician, not as a true ruler. So that without any of the standard divine rights and the assumptions that are given to kings, this was a man that we see throughout the Megillah, had all of the symptoms of the modern politician to the point of literal paranoia, pathological paranoia at the end of the Megillah, in which he goes completely crazy. And, you know, perhaps for good reason, he was murdered in his chambers eventually, not in the Megillah, but that's what happened to Xerxes. And that provides us much of what we need to understand to recognize the change that was taking place. Remember that in the dreams of Daniel, that was really the first stage of the real difference from Bavel in the Malchus. And that's why Chazal talk about Achashverosh means Achiv Shel Rosh, Achashverosh. Who was the Rosh? The Rosh in the vision of Daniel, the Rosh of Zahav, as Daniel says to Nebuchadnezzar, and who you are the Rosh of Zahav, you are the gold head. This person was not a gold head, but he was Achiv Shel Rosh in the sense that that one destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, Nebuchadnezzar, and this one desired to prevent the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash. So that too becomes very much a key to understanding. We already spoke in our introduction about the way that this particular period is specifically merumas in the sitna that was going on back in the land of Yehuda and the attempt to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash from the time of Koresh. And here, this man is initially identified in the Medrash by the remez to his connections to Nebuchadnezzar, who was the destroyer. And so what we need to come out with here is a broader historical understanding on many levels. First of all, as we spoke about earlier, the fact that Bavel is actually the protagonist, in a sense, of the initial drive to Yisrael. In other words, it was Nimrod and Avram that squared off initially, before even Lech Lecha. The original trip that Avram had made there, as Yisrael, as Tosfos points out, the Rambam points out, was a trip to escape Nimrod, to escape the dangers that were facing him in causing the upheaval in society that he was causing philosophically. And the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash by the man who is identified in the Gemara as Ben Beno Shel Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha, Shel Nimrod HaRasha, this is Nebuchadnezzar, is clearly a victory, and that's how it's perceived in a historical sense, is the victory of Bavel over Avram. In other words, if, after everything that Avram is promised and achieves, the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed by Bavel, then it's essential to turn that upside down and to achieve a new level of victory that goes back to the original interaction between Nimrod and Avram. And this, for the reasons we saw yesterday, is the reason that we find the Bavel language aspect to become so important. But even more importantly, remember, and this is one of the most unbelievable ironies of the whole story, remember that the idea of Nimrod was Kivush, and that the idea of Avram was freedom, essentially. Nimrod's justification for his entire approach was, as he said, pen nafotz al pnei kol adama. So we cannot afford pirud. Pirud is going to lead us ultimately to nuclear war. We're going to destroy ourselves. It's worth putting limits on human development and growth, and at the same time to ensure survival and to maintain the species. So we will go and make ourselves a name, and we'll just keep it at this. Avram didn't really have a solution that he could offer to that issue. But he still maintained that allowing the development of humanity was going to end up providing a solution. The destruction of Beit HaMikdash implied that he was wrong. And that means that one of the most important things that has to come out of this Megillah, and it ironically does, is that Bavel itself is destroyed from within by a search for freedom. And that demands the change from the Malchut, as Nimrod has it, to the Malchut that Daniel saw in the vision of politicians and populist government in which everybody's going to end up having a say. And again, there's always the foil in the background. The foil in the background is always Amalek. It has to be Amalek. Because Amalek essentially represents the paths not taken, the other possibility of realities, the complete and absolute freedom, the doubt of all meaning and all patterns that people are identifying, and therefore is actually the foil both to Avram and to Nimrod. And that's why the essential building of the Beit HaMikdash is linked throughout history, and in the Gemara is linked by a mitzvah to the destruction of Amalek. So remember, when you come into Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvahs go. You have to appoint a melech, you have to destroy Zaro Shalom Aleich, you have to build a Beit HaMikdash. But the Yitzia from Mitzrayim, coming to Kabbalat HaTorah, Vayisu Mirafidim, which is where we meet Amalek, Vayavo Midbar Sinai. The Knesset Eretz Yisrael, this second time, to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, goes through Kimu V'Kiblu HaYehudim, just as they did at Har Sinai, Kiblu Mashki, Kimu Masha Kiblu Kvar, required therefore the same Nisiyah Mirafidim, with the same level of doubt, Hayesh Hashem Birkebenu Imayim, to be able to achieve a renewed Kabbalah Satera and a renewed Binyan Ha'aretz. The same thing is true, obviously, in our own times, in which the primary issue that we deal with, although many people are strangely not aware of this, but the primary issue that we deal with is Amalek. Notice they think that we deal with Poras, let's say in Iran, even if they're biblically inclined, you know, so they'll talk about, you know, the Gulf War in terms of Babel and the current world situation in terms of Poras and so on, which the truth is the Zohar and the Midrashim talk about. But the real issue is not that any actual threats are posed to the survival of Yisrael from Bnei Yishmael or Poras or any of these other things. The only real dangers for Yisrael is postmodernism, really, is multiculturalism, is Western liberalism, is the entire Western mythos in which the original question of the Torah, which is Ganavim Atem, and there is no right, there are no rights, there are no patterns, there are no God-givens in the world. That is the main issue. It's the main issue not only for Yisrael, but for the survival of civilization itself. If there's any type of structure, certainly any type of something that resembles a moral structure, any sense of a particular history, any sense of a special purpose, is completely and totally destroyed by the entire postmodern ethos. Really. And so it's really just as it was in this time. There were 75,000 people, and that's all that were represented here as the dangers to Israel. Nothing more. The same thing is true in our times. I mean, we talk about a billion Arabs and Persians and God knows what else that are anxious to destroy Israel, who could be wiped out at the touch of a button. But there are maybe 70,000 Bnei Ambalek that are in charge of the media and the universities and that represent all of what allows that to happen. Everything else is just sort of taken in by that approach to life. And it's not surprising that where we find Koresh and Daryavesh perfectly happy, rebuilding Beit HaMikdash and seeing it as part of religious tolerance and so on, and maybe you could even pray for the king and his family, and that would be lovely, we'd appreciate that, paying for korbanos and so on. The one guy who stood against that entire approach of Parah, before and after him, was Ahasuerus. Because of the fact that, as we're going to see, the relationship between Haman and Ahasuerus was not a coincidental one. The connection of Amalek to Ahasuerus's need to loosen the entire structure that he had inherited, illicitly probably, but that he inherited from Babel, was part of a vision that he had not only of his own political survival, but it was a philosophical vision. It was a philosophical vision that the Megillah pokes fun at beneath the surface. That's the Gilbert and Sullivan aspect of the Megillah that we were talking about. It points out the absurd contradictions in his supposed choice of law and order, freedom, sexual expression, with the realities of genocide without any law and order, making sure that things go entirely his way, government-sanctioned rape, exactly the opposite of the issues that he claimed that was behind his survival. That's part of the irony that the Megillah keeps bringing out and the satire that we find in it. And a lot of this is Merumas right here in the first pasuk. So we have a guy who is Ahasuerus Ehedya. He's making himself melech, and therefore is always in a process of making himself melech, which means that there's not an ounce of honesty moving with the populist needs always, and being, because of that, completely dependent on the winds of the times, and because of that, of course, tending towards paranoia, in the end actually losing it. And this was a man, and there's another strange hint here, who became the first person to rule over, despite the fact that Koresh claimed, as we saw yesterday in his little rock, just as he said, Kol Elohe Aratzot, or Kol Aratzot Datan Liyael. So the Gemara says, gosh, didn't he already rule over everything? No. That he was just Mishtabeh Benafshe. He was just showing off, which we find that he actually does. So, and this is the first guy that actually had Sheva V'Yasru Me'a Medina. And strangely, again, everybody's familiar with that wild Gemara, that appears in Midrashim as well, as to why was it that there were 127 Medinot that ended up being given over to Esther. Ma'ara ta'estelim loch al me'asri v'shava Medinot. And the answer is because Sora lived 127 years. I mean, that is the craziest. And there have been, you know, reams of silly drushes that have been spoken about on all of that business. But there is a tremendous key here in at least one element of that, and that is the centrality of women to this story. It's clear it's not only the centrality of women as the players in this story, But it's the centrality of the relationship between men and women that's central to the story. And because of that, we're going to see that the elements of the story are drawn back all the way to Gan Eden. Obviously, I mean, if we darshan Haman is Hamin Ha'etz, Asher Amarti L'cha Lo Le'echol, which is the Makar of Haman, according to the Gemara, that means that the issues of wine and women and clothing and song, all of which are very primal Gan Eden issues, are not here coincidentally. The breakdown in the relationship between the sexes that comes as a result of the story of Gan Eden need to be addressed here and are blatantly addressed. I mean, one doesn't have to look very far to see the contrast of the relationship of Esther to Achashverosh, the way it is that he takes advantage of her initially, the attempt to destroy Vashti, the way that he took the Malucha through Vashti, and so on. And we're going to trace that back to here in the Midrashim as well. So a number of the central themes are identified right between the lines in the opening sentence. And one additional thing, the very fact that it says Vayhi bimei Achashverosh implies that it's the days of Achashverosh that need to be understood in order to provide the context for the Megillah. And that in a sense, the one guy that we would think the Megillah is not about, Achashverosh, I mean, he's sort of like this weird kind of guy that gets pushed around, and you know, the fool, a buffoon, exactly. This machlokas in the Gemara about is he actually a wise king or a buffoon? I mean, the way that the Gilbert and Sullivan element of the Megillah plays it, they certainly turn him into the Mikado, and he's a very strange fellow. And yet, over here we're talking about Vayhi Achashverosh. If you consider that the end of the Megillah is probably the most outrageous anticlimax in history, in which the Megillah closes with a list of the new taxes that the King Achashverosh has put on the various communities, then you realize that something very strange is actually going on here, because we couldn't care less about the taxes of Achashverosh unless he really has something to do with the nature of this Megillah. So that Vayhi bimei Achashverosh is meant to be taken seriously, not to point to a particular historical moment that we're going to be able to identify anyway, because we never have. Bayamim ahem. Now that word bayamim ahem is actually a word that we found in Mitzrayim also. Bayamim harabim ahem. The Gemara Darshan said that these were yamim of tsar. These were the days in which things were between the original, the Pekida, at the time of Mitzrayim, and the Yetziah. The same thing was going on. Yemei Tsar, these were the days that Daniel was confused by, the days in which nothing seemed to be happening when everything ought to have been happening, and it's exactly what the Pasuk refers to over here. Because Kishevet HaMalach HaChashverosh HaKisei Malchuto certainly sounds like he had just taken over the kingdom, as he sat on Kisei Malchuto. Asher B'Shushan HaBira, which wasn't Shushan HaBira, which wasn't in Shushan HaBira. Because the Kisei HaMalchut that we are aware of, that he inherited, was in Bavel. That was the main Kisei HaMalchut. The secondary, the winter vacationing home in Shushan, and the summer vacationing home in Persepolis, these were not the real capitals. And yet we say, this was the yeshiva of Achashverosh, al Kisei Malchuto Asher B'Shushan HaBira. Which, as the Mefarshei HaMikra points out, particularly the Malbim, the selection of a new capital is absolutely central to the proclamation of a new system of government. And that we find the same thing happened in the United States. The idea of building a capital, creating a special district that would be a capital, and in Brazil, in the creation of Brasilia in the 60s. It was the idea of we're leaving the past behind, we're taking on a new paradigm, building a city to express that paradigm. So the very fact of Kisei Malchuto Asher B'Shushan HaBira teaches us that something is changing. Furthermore, we're immediately faced by a contradiction, because it says Kishevet HaMelech HaChashverosh, which means this was just at the beginning of the Malchut. And the next words are Bishnat Shalosh L'Malcho, in the third year of his reign. Then what would be the point of saying Kishevet HaMelech HaChashverosh? It wasn't Kishevet. It was in the third year of his reign. So the Gemara goes through an analysis of what must have been going on during this entire period. Now remember that we already understood that the central issue over here is Ad Chatzi HaMalchut V'lo Davar Chotzeh Et HaMalchut. The one thing that Achashverosh particularly could not tolerate was the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Not because of the political issues, but because pure, outright this word Semitism is absurd, but anti-Yisraelism. Because freedom, along the lines of Amalek, is so profoundly anti-Israel. Because, and this comes out in Hitler's writing as well, the idea of there being a system of values that is an imperative is anathema, absolutely anathema. Those of you are searching for what you believe to be absolute freedom, which means having everything precisely the way you wish to perceive it without having any set of references at all. And that, of course, is why Amalek is anti-Zechira in its essence. Zechor is the opposite of Amalek. We say Zechor Asher Asalach al Amalek. It's the Zechor itself that's destructive of Amalek because there is no history. In postmodern approach. It's basically whatever you make of it. Everybody has his own history, his own particular way of looking at it. The idea of Zechira is so horrifically experienced by them as the creation of conscience, the creation of guilt, the feeling that there might be something out there that could be more important than the way that I just experience things. That is what needed to be destroyed. And it was that stood against the Shushan HaBira v'Achashverosh, as we're going to see, where the essential point of Shushan HaBira was complete breakdown of all social and moral norms, a wild attempt at sexual freedom that came all the way at the time, exactly the same way that did in the United States. This was basically the 60s of Persia. And obviously, in the context of a sutta, which the queen is requested to come out stark naked, and the idea is, the Gemara says, that it was a planned out desire to create a sexual revolution that was central to the whole new idea of the populism of the Malchut. In that context, we can understand why it was that he did not want a Beit HaMikdash. That's very much the idea of Lo Avdu Yisrael of Adazar L'Atir Lehem Arayot B'Farhesi. That's the only purpose of these things. So it was all, as many of the leading philosophers of the 60s are now able to identify, that all of this was only to allow us complete sexual freedom. That's what it was about. And the idea over here was exactly the same. As strange as it sounds from the outside, it's clear in the perspective of time that that's exactly what happened. And that also points to a lot of the ironies in how this degenerated so rapidly in the case of Achashverosh. So the Gemara says, how do we explain this Kishevet HaMelech HaChashverosh? First, this beautiful medrash, by the way, that Kishevet HaMelech HaChashverosh is actually an idea of there is no yeshiva. It's only by Yisrael. It says Bishevet Yisrael B'cheshbon. Because the fact is that there is never really a feeling of belonging anywhere when you're making it happen for yourself. So it's only as if I am settled. But there's always this feeling of, gee, I hope it goes on another day. Because whenever it's up to you to make it happen, you never feel very happy about it. So there's no yeshuva dat that's ever involved. You're always on the edge. But there is a deeper explanation of this being on the edge. This is what the Gemara says. Bayamim ha'im kishevet ha'melech, as the Gemara Megillah teaches us, that kishevet means le'achar shenit yashva da'ato. Doesn't mean when he became king. It means when he finally started to gain a little bit of confidence. Because what was bothering him was the disasters that had overtaken those before him, particularly Belshazzar. The only one that had made a statement against the Beit HaMikdash itself was Belshazzar. So you take it out the Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash, then the handwriting on the wall destroys his kingdom, and that's the beginning of the end for Babel and so on. And so he says to himself, look, obviously it was a mistake that was made in the understanding of the Shivim Shanan. This is the same mistake that Daniel makes and is part of the whole complex series of visions that is given to him to understand the multi-level Shivim Shana that were given in so many different ways by the various Levim. So he says to himself, I will work this out and won't make any mistakes. So in other words, if Yisrael won't be Zocha to a Geula, then it means I'm free and clear. So he says, look, the problem was, it says, Lefi malot lebavel shivim shana, I've quoted them, remember? And on the other hand, it says, Lemalot lechorvot Yerushalayim shivim shana. So if you figure that there were 45 years in Nebuchadnezzar, 23 years of Evel Merodach, two additional years that he had before he took out Belshazzar, the Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, he says, okay, that equals 70, looks like we're free and clear, takes out the Beit HaMikdash, and he uses those Kelim. But that was a disaster, because in fact, the promise of the Geula, as opposed to the promise of a Pekina, was L'chorvot Yerushalayim. So he makes this mistake, Achashverosh figured out what happened, what went wrong. So he, and because of that, Daniel says to him, "Al more shamayitrom amta mayana de beta itaifanat. You lorded it over the Lord of the heavens, and you took out the kalim of his house, and you had them used in front of you. Therefore, you have been found wanting, and your kingdom is going to be broken into pieces." Which, of course, is the other meaning of the word paras, which is paras, is the same words that were used in that writing on the wall. That it has become broken now, and these are the pieces, paras and madai. And so he decides that he's going to figure out what the mistake is. It doesn't say l'malchut bavel now, does it? Says Achashverosh the brilliant. It says l'bavel. So bavel must mean galut bavel. Now, that means that there were an additional 8 years. Okay, so he takes the last year, Belshazzar, 5 years of Daryavesh and Koresh, two of his own years, and that's 70 years. He sees 70 years have passed, and there's no Geula. He says, okay, now we could take out the Kelim Beis HaMikdash again, which is exactly what happens, we're going to see. And once again, we have the Kelim, Mikelim Shonim, the Psukim Tekam, or Yekarti Fart Gidolatom, which he takes out the Big Day Kuhuna of the Kohen Gadol, Kavod V'Tiforet, and has them brought out in front of him, very much as Belshazzar did. And so he's coming to show them now. He makes a party. Hasamishtelachol Sarav V'Avadav, Chel Paras Umadaya Partamim, V'Sarei HaMedinot Lifanav. Which, as the Malbim points out, is very much a backwards way of saying things, unless you're trying to make a point of undoing etiquette. By the way, Obama's idiotic chief of staff did exactly the same thing, inviting all the wrong people in the wrong order and welcoming them. And that's exactly what's happening over here.
New one.
Yeah, that woman, that horrible black woman, that said, "I'm not interested in anything that had been done until now." It was just awful. So, but here, that's exactly what he's doing. He takes Sarah. Rav Va'avadav is who he invites first. And the Partamim and Sarei HaMedinot that had been there lefanav, with Malbim learned. So these were the governors that were always the ones that were first in place, so they came later, after his own cronies. So first it's Lechol Sarav Va'avadav, which is a very nice diyuk. And this is the party that he's making. And this party in the end becomes an opening the White House kind of ceremony. Look at me, I'm a regular guy, in which he invites everyone in at the close of the party. And here he's got all of the important people, all of the rich people. Baharoto et osher kevod malchuto, vet yekar tiferet gidulato, yamim rabim shmonim uma'at yom. And as the Gra points out, the number of otsarot that Nebuchadnezzar had buried, the way the Midrash adds it up, was 1,080. These were otsarot that had been hidden, actually were hidden underwater, through waterways that had been, sort of like the Phantom of the Opera kind of thing. So it was underneath the gates of Shushan. What was done later by Daryavesh is he diverted the waters of Euphrates, was able to uncover all of this. He takes it over, and as the Gra points out, you have a list over here of six otsarot. Osher kavod malchuto yikar tiferet gedulato. Six otsarot, which he took out, as the Medrash says, he would take out every day new things to show them. So if he took out new things to show them for 180 days, multiplied by six, is 1,080 otsarot. Which means that every day he took out another one of these magical storehouses that Nebuchadnezzar had brought and exposed it to them. So that's he used to do, and that's the, according to the Medrash, Shishaot Sarot HaPateach U'Ma'arelehem B'chol Yom. The Gra works out that actually ties in directly to the number of Otsarot of Nebuchadnezzar. And, as the Gemara says, the Loshon V'yekar Tiferet Gedulato is Melamed Shelavash Bigdei Kuhuna. This teaches us that just like over here, Yekar Tifarto, the big day kuna are exactly that, l'chavoda l'tifaret, and he wanted to make himself again the replacement for the Mikdash that was. Now that ties in beautifully if Mordechai was actually sent back in order to work against the impact of the lobbyists that were trying to prevent the Mikdash from being built, and Shamshai was the head sofer, was the child of Haman, and this guy is himself interested in preventing it for his own reasons, that the centerpiece that would come up again and again in the weirdest way would be indeed the snide references to the Beit HaMikdash. And as these days now completed, the king decided to make it a popular event. And asa melech lechol ha'am nimtzeim b'shushan habira lemigadol v'yad katan mishte shivat yamim b'chatzar ginat bitan ha'melech. And so first he had gone ahead and brought in all of the leaders of the Malucha. There's, by the way, a very beautiful engraving on our wall in Shushan of Partumim. And they actually seem to be at a cocktail party. This is really cute. Here is a map, Mihodu, at Kush. So here it goes. Went all the way up to India, down to Ethiopia. And that was the full extent of the 127 different areas run by the satraps. These, by the way, golden and silver tablets are the Dayavish foundation stones that were found. These were from Persepolis, but there were those that were found under Shushan as well, with all of the details of what went into building it and how expensive it was and so on, which is, as I say, also very, very cute. The size. I think we were talking about the size of the place. Mm-hmm. So the Apadna, which is the area that this party took place, is like 480,000 square feet. I mean, you're talking about major shopping malls, you know, as an area for bringing people in. And there is in the Louvre the capital of one of the beams, just what was on top of the cedar that had been brought from Lebanon. So they have an actual one that they brought from Shushan that you can see in the museum. This thing is astounding. And this is it. There is a person standing next to this. This is just the top. This is the capital in the Louvre. What is that? This is amazing.
And wood.
No, it's support. They put a wooden beam to show what it was. This supported the wooden beam. No, this is all. This is stone. And then on top, this went on top of the wood of the. These are what's left standing of these. But look at the size of these things and the people and the camels. They're almost invisible. You're talking about something that is just mind-boggling.
They were compensating.
The mosques do a better job. Here's a bowl, and it has an inscription around the bottom of it that reads as follows: Artaxasta, the great king, king of kings, king of countries, the son of Ahasuerus the king, of Ahasuerus who was the son of Dariovish the king, in whose house this silver drinking cup was made. Unbelievable. So this is like hot stuff. So this was actually big enough to support exactly what it was he was trying to do. And when we say b'chatzar ginat bitan ha'melech, these are different places. The chatzar was outside. The ginat were the gardens, all of which, by the way, are identifiable, and you can see exactly where these places are. In the bitan, which is this wide open place, which is enormous. And so first the Gemara says, well, maybe there were different levels in which the innermost people were able to go inside and the other ones had to stay outside at the gardens. The Gemara is doche that for a very profound reason. And that is that we're going to see later on that the one thing that Ahasuerus had to avoid was making anybody think that he respected anybody else more than him, which was the whole basis of politics. So he had to get everybody to agree that he agreed with them, you know. And therefore that couldn't be the explanation. So it must be that the party just kept growing, and they started it small, and then they had to move it, and they started in the chotzer, then they had to open up the garden, and then finally they realized there were so many people that they had to go out into the Apadna. Yes, indeed. Perfect Woodstock it was. I guess the word got around fast about all those naked queens. Chul karpasu tchelet zachuz b'chavlevutz v'yargaman agilili chesev v'yamudei shesh mitot zahav v'chesev aur itzapat pahat v'shesh v'dar v'socharet. And so Chazal have very interesting perushim of these words. The simple meaning of the words were that these were hangings that they had all around the apadna of white, beautiful, fine cotton or silks. They had wool that was colored with cheles. These were supported by beautiful fine linen and reddish wool or turquoise wool on silver rods, marble pillars, couches, beds. I mean, that's the name for a couch in those days. Where actually we have some pictures of that here, which I'll show you. We're on a floor of this beautiful, shining marble. And Chazal say that actually there was no, even Shlomo HaMelech didn't have access to this particular machseva where they were able to get this marble. It was given over only to this Malchut HaRisha'a, the quarry. And they didn't have this quarry. Now, what's amazing is the way that Chazal pick up on the language over here of the names of these various things, because they all are merames to some of the changes that we were discussing in the nature of the society as a whole. One of the most striking is dar v'socharet. Dar, of course, is the first half of the word dror, which, as Chazal tell us, or Rashi brings even a chumash, that dror means that you can be dar wherever you want, and you can bring sechora, which is socharet, to all places without having to pay taxes. So what this was the creation of a free enterprise zone in which you'd be able. This is how the Gemara understands it, that it was kore dror l'chol balei aschora, and this became the beginning of this massive new economic development, which really smacks very much of modern society, in which what were previously these 127 different, and God knows how many, at the time, as we see in the Gemara, the taxes and the control of the roads and the bridges and the every different thing that each one of these little tiny city-states would have. Here, were completely obliterated, and everything was given to be absolutely free. And the idea over here was, and this goes, I mean, it keeps going through various lashonas in the Gemara, but the concepts we saw sound very exaggerated, but as we saw in the list that Dayovish himself left on the foundation stones in Shushan, the amount of money and gold that went into this place was absolutely crazy. What's interesting is they opened up the graves of the noble women. They found like a whole section of graves of women that apparently had been buried in the Beit Hanashim, which hadn't been taken over by grave robbers. They were hidden until fairly recently. They recovered 38 kilograms of pure gold in graves. You understand what we're talking about? 38 kilograms of gold that was just thrown into the grave with these people? Try to figure out the modern the modern value of 38 kilograms of gold. I mean, it's astounding. So, although this sounds like absolutely crazy, but the fact is that one of the ideas that he was trying to do was establish the absolute prosperity and the sense of endless, endless flowing money and possibilities that he was going to show to the people that were coming to this party. And this is, as the Chazal tell us, Borei Shalvato Shel Torah Shah. This is the incredible shalva that he was zocha to, that his floor was literally filled with beautiful, expensive stones. So that the sheish over here also is a reference to it. The Medr says it refers to Margoliot, Loshen of Sos, the Sameach. Vashkot Bechlei Zahav V'chelim Mekelim Shonim. And, as we spoke about yesterday, and we looked at the pictures of the various kelim that they actually would use in Shushan. And kelim Mekelim Shonim, on a simple level, simply means that everybody was given very creative and individually designed kelim. But as Chazal tell us, Shonim means, oh no, don't tell me you're doing this again. And this, of course, is a reference to, once again, they took out the kelim from the Beit HaMikdash, because he was convinced that he had figured out the real timing of the Shivim Shana, which his poor predecessor had lost his kingdom because of, and that was the writing on the wall, of course, at the time of Belshazzar, to whose daughter he was married. So he really felt that sense of continuity. Right. And came out of Bat Kol Min HaShamayim, it said, Shonim, you're doing this again? And indeed, Bas, Satan, as the Gemara says, Verikid Beneim, and ended up whatever happened at that party. V'ein Malchut Rav Kiyad HaMelech. And then there was this endless supply of the finest wines, and as the Gemara puts it, Rav means, has to mean something in particular. So that what it means is, and we'll see the significance of this later on in the Megillah, it has unbelievably beautiful significance, which we can't really grasp until we see the pattern as a whole. But as the Gemara puts it, the idea of Yen Malchut Rav is, he was mashka to each individual wine that was older than that individual. Whoa. So in other words, what it was that you were drinking was there before you were born. This is fascinating. Now, the implications of that we're going to see later. That's right. And so the impact over here was hashtiya chadat inones. And the drinking was all appropriate. There was no forcing of anybody. And normally the cocktail party is sort of forced to keep up. And that was, I mean, everybody knows about Stalin's horrific drinking parties in which you'd be lucky to get out alive. And it was absolutely horrible because he forced you to drink and you would spill your guts with the right kind of questions. And lots of people never made it out. And over here, the simple meaning is that it was the type of place which everybody could drink to their own satisfaction. There was no feeling of being forced to partake. But there's various levels that Chazal see in this. First of all, enones means feeling comfortable. Feeling comfortable means that everybody was given wine from their own country, so they could feel comfortable about it. But one of the most important aspects is enones. There was no sense that the Jews that were there had to participate in drinking Stam Yena, because nobody was forcing them to drink. In which case, this might have been a mechuvan. One of the Talmidim, some of the Talmidim, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, when he asked them, "Why do you think the whole thing happened?" I said, "Because whether it was ishtachavat." But they suggested it was because they were mishtatef in the seuda and they drank from Yain Nesach, and therefore that would be very important. That enones. B'yayinesa, as the Midrash puts it. Enones, to force a guy to drink. Enones, to determine how much you're going to mix your wine with. There's Yayin Kad, there's Yayin Moser, and so on. And so, Kichen Yisad HaMelech Al Kol Rav Beito. And he wanted that each one, is a beautiful Midrash in this, Al Kol Rav Beito, Lason Kertson Ish Ve'ish, each master of the house. That's Rav Beito, which means that it was a family. So you could come with your kids, and you could come with your wife, and everybody could sit down at family tables. They had mixed seating, as opposed to these horrible places where you can't even sit down at, with your wife. So over here, he had it that each person was able to sit. I'll call Rav Beito. Beautiful, beautiful chef. Of course, the Poshita meaning is that all of those who were in charge of the Suda, the maitre d' and so on, were told, La'asot kiretzon ish ve'ish. Everybody should get exactly what it is that he would like. So you could order any meal that you wanted, but that's the Pashtas. But the deep, endless eating, exactly, sounds like a Catskill dinner. But the deeper meaning of it, the way the Gemara sees it, is La'asot kiretzon ish ve'ish. There are two people that are identified as ish in the Megillah. Ish Yudia Yabashushana Bira, because it's Mordechai. Ish Sarvo Yev, this was Haman Arahazeh. Those two ish is what Achashverosh was initially sensitive to. Because remember, the way we understood it, the way Rashi brings in Ezra, and he actually brings it here in the Megillah later on as well, is that Mordechai was there to be the lobbyist that was going to counter the hired lobbyists that were working for those who were trying to prevent the Binyan of Beis HaMikdash. La'asot kiretzon ish ve'ish means he was trying to find some kind of middle ground in which everybody would be happy with him. Of course, this is exactly where modern politicians go wrong also. You end up doing nothing that works for anyone. There's a beautiful medrash which HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, La'asot kiretzon ish ve'ish, really? I know, I got this problem all the time. Two guys fall in love with the same girl, and they're both praying to me, make sure I get the girl. Even I can't do it. How are you going to get the kirtan ish v'ish exactly? And a number of other midrashim talk about the same idea, in which there's always going to be a decision that needs to be made. So politicians hate triage, because life is all about triage. But if you're not going to be willing to risk anybody being upset with you, that's so the idea over here, the Melech Hafach V'Chan, that comes out in the Gemara, is precisely the way people feel today about politicians. Not that you stand for anything. It's that wherever is the greater the need for you to respond to pressure, that's where you respond. But what about your statement yesterday? What happened to read my lips and all of that stuff? Mm-hmm. You know, well, it meant something else. Of course, this becomes very important. I mentioned that on purpose because we'll see that the beginning of the Megillah is wrapped around tax breaks. That's part of the Kara drawer, l'kol ba'alei haschora. The end of the Megillah is built on adding taxes. And that is important. So for the whole political element, it's time for a pufferfish attack. John Tritzy! He's up, see? Without the pufferfish, he's not. Of course, pufferfish poison works within 15 seconds, but he's up for those 15 seconds. You'll remember this one. Gam Vashti Amalka Astamishte Nashim Beta Malchuta Shela Melech Achashverosh. Now, the Gam is fascinating. What do you mean, Gam Vashti Amalka? So what the Gemara derives from this is something that people don't generally understand what the Gemara is trying to say. They take it as on a rather, you know, silly kind of Gilbert and Sullivan level, which is a lot of what the Megillah is. The way the Gemara puts it is that while he was playing with the pumpkins, she was playing with the squashes. Which means they were both interested in the sexual revolution. But the deeper meaning is that gam means that they were both in this together, which is very much the opposite of the way we read the Megillah. And that actually what appeared to be this spontaneous madness in which he gets drunk and he loses control and he asks for the queen to be brought naked and the whole crazy story was planned. And therefore the Gemara comes with the question, so why didn't she come? Didn't she want to come? I mean, the whole idea was that they were going out specifically in order to create this new revolution. So why didn't she come? That's where we get that wild Gemara in which, well, Gavriel came and pinned a tail on the donkey, or she must have gotten Sarat and so on. But you see, the beauty of that answer is that a sexual revolution only works when you're presentable. In other words, it's all part of a self-created bubble. The moment anything comes that gets in the way, all of a sudden you're very moral. How dare you? We've already established what you are. But how dare you? That's the issue. So over here, of course, the insight of Chazal of the Gam takes us all the way back to Gan Eden, as we saw before. All of the issues here are central to Gan Eden, including the question. You were reading? Oh, gee, I'll have to take that one back. You throw it at me. So we saw that we have, yes, the simple clothing of Gan Eden, in the sense of literal clothing, wine, women, sin, control, but most importantly, control over women, which is the William Shoba. What was happening over here was a show in which the control over women was changed because of desire. And the fact is, if you take a look in Gan Eden, you have exactly the same story. The relationship, ve'elisheich teshukatech, v'huyim sholba, that idea of you, woman, will desire more deeply the sexual attention of the man and won't be able to ask. And therefore he will be mosholba, is meant to change here. And that's part of a sexual revolution. So what appears to be a memshala over women, that's the whole you hefner kind of idea in which now Vashti becomes a playgirl. And she's playing along with becoming a playgirl. So on one level, there's many people who say, my God, that's a degradation of womanhood. You know, these women's libbers who are often very masculine, who don't like this because it puts women down. And yet, in terms of the sexual revolution, the openness is a contradiction to the chait of Gan, to the klola of Gan Eden, of the huyim shoboch, because now he needs you, not you need him. Because that's what happens. If I can acknowledge the fact that I need you, and a woman can not have to hide the fact that she's involved and enjoying being the playgirl, then the whole system of William Shobach breaks down. Because that's exactly how the Gemara defines William Shobach. William Shobach, because you are unable to be open about your need. You're always pretending to be above it. But once you're ready to be a playgirl, and this is what she's ready to do, so that she doesn't see that there's a problem in being brought stark naked to this su'udah. Now, he's not going to announce this. So therefore, the whole thing comes in supposedly a state of drunken stupor. But as Chazal have said, the gum makes it evident that she was planning this all along. So this was part of the creation of the revolution of the new Malchut that was supposed to come in Shushan HaBirah. Therefore, say Chazal, beautifully, where's the other gum? Vatitein gam le'isha ima. It goes all the way back to the original gum in which the first gum reduced the male to taking of the Eitz Hadas with her. And that was why, as Rashi says, I mean, how's it going to relate to a woman who knows sin? He'll probably marry somebody else. that initial manipulation. And over here, in the attempt to be mitaken that, it turns out to be an ironic destruction in the worst possible way, which comes, of course, in the next parak, in which the government is now sponsoring rape and making a wonderful moral party out of it. This is the ultimate irony of the attempt to undo that gum. Gam vashti hamalka asta mishtei nashim beit hamalchut asher lamelech Achashverosh. And so Vashti herself did the same thing. And she made a mishtei for the women back in the beit hamalchut to Melech Achashverosh. Now this is also something that implies that the mishtei nashim was still part of the Melech Achashverosh's own palace, and that actually turns out to be part of what was found in Shushan HaBirah.
Bayom haShevi'i katov lev haMelech bayayin amar leMehuman bizitach harvona biktav avakta zeitar vecharkas shivat asarisim hamishoratim et pnei haMelech haChashverosh. You'll notice that the Achashverosh at the beginning has now become haMelech haChashverosh, where until now he was in the process of being Molech, which indicates that what was actually happening over here was a consolidation of power, not only a consolidation of power, but changing the nature of the Malchut. And this is the way that Rabbi Yochanan saw an introduction to the entire Megillah, as the Gemara in Megillah says, that Rabbi Yonatan, rather, was Patach Lapitchalai Parshat Amirach. V'kamti Aleihem, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'ichrati Lebavel, Shem U'she'er V'nin V'nechet. What it does this mean? Shem v'she'er nin v'nechet. Says the Gemara, shem refers to tav. She'er refers to lashon, because it's the shared element of human society. Nin is always referred to as malchut. Nechet refers to vasht. And what's astonishing is that all of this happened simultaneously in the space of a few minutes. Bovo was destroyed at this suudah. Remember that as long as the legitimacy of Achashverosh was drawn from his marriage to the daughter of Belshazzar, it was still Malchut Bavel. All of the official communications were carried on specifically in Kasdit. You were not allowed to communicate Kilashon Amo. Letters had to be written in the Ktav of Bavel. The Malchus was seen as the continuation of Malchut Bavel. In one fell sweep, Vashti was destroyed, the connection to Malchus Bavel was destroyed, the language was destroyed, She'ayish Medaber Kilashon Amo, and the Ksav was destroyed. All of this was back to the original Bov and Asalon of Shem, which was Nimrod's Bavel, which was the Lashon of Bavel, exactly the same issues that had over here, which was the Shlita of Bavel and the Malchus of Nimrod. This was the final result of the attempt to destroy the Beis HaMikdash on the part of Nebuchadnezzar, and happens in the context of Achashverosh attempting to set himself up, little recognizing that he was acting entirely out the Gezerah, the instantaneous Gezerah, when the moment came, as Chazal tell us, Ein Malchut Nogat Bechavata Filu Kebeloi Nima, that even a hair's breadth, one Malchut doesn't touch the next. The transition completely between Bavel into the next stage of Malchut happened in this single night. And so here it was by Yom HaShevi'i, Katov lev haMelech bayayin. Says the Gemara, man, it sure took him a long time to get high. Like, what in the world is that? Why did it take him 7 days to get high? So that really doesn't make much sense, does it? So here is a very very strange thing that, again, people don't pay attention to because of the Gilbert and Sullivan elements that are involved. So what the Gemara says is this crazy idea that Yom HaShvi is actually a reference to Yom HaShabbat. And Yom HaShabbat is specifically the time where it was the moment for Vashti to be stripped. Why was it the moment of Vashti to be stripped? This crazy story. She used to take Benot Yisrael and strip them on Shabbos and force them to do malacha on Shabbos. Now, obviously, the strange sexual elements that are involved here in that and in her activities in the Beit HaNashim and the Mishtefer Beit HaNashim, something's weird about this woman. But not only that, but then this is seen as the Mida Keneged Mida. But so that since she was Bedavka, chosen Yom HaShabbat, this Yom HaShvi is not a reference to the seventh day of the party. It's the Yom HaShvi of Shabbos Kodesh, which was the Mida Keneged Mida of Vashti. But once again, it shows that the Medrash also says that Gam Vashti Amalka is also Merames, that in the same way that he was Motzi the Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, she was Motzi the Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash. In the same way that he pranced around in the Big Day Kuna, she pranced around in the Big Day Kuna. So in other words, the commonality between them wasn't simply a question of the political changes. There was the clear-cut awareness on the side of both of them that went hand-in-hand with a need to prevent the recreation of this spiritual center in Yerushalayim. So that sensitivity, and, you know, it's funny. Whenever I say things like this over to my kids when they were young, they say, you know, oh, come on, the Jews and the elephant question. Like, everything really revolves around the Jews. I mean, come off it, you know. And then as you get older and you begin to realize, you know, here are the Romans with all they could think of is carrying a menorah and using the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash and Jewish money to build their coliseums. But all of that is just, then you realize. And here they create an organization of Me'ah Esrim V'Sheva Medino to do nothing but talk about Israel. Yomam V'Layl. They have nothing to discuss, nothing that holds them together, no commonality. Only the destruction of Yisrael. And you're really concerned for the Jews and the elephant question. You have an entire world that is willing to pathologically. And it's fascinating because the Medrash of Esther describes exactly the type of things that you read in the newspapers today. What were the newspaper articles that were coming out by Haman? What was he writing about? And it has these actual things about Mordechai being a murderer and having come from this nation that believes in genocide. And I mean, I look at the craziest things exactly as you find today in every week, another article about the murderous Nazi Jews.
And he'll surely moderate, and he'll be good. We can negotiate.
You know, I wonder why they didn't think of that. That was the real solution. My gosh. And so, again, we see all of the backdrop that allows us to get a better sense of what's happening later on when Amalek shows up and how it is that this goes hand in hand, certainly on that level, we'll see, on much deeper levels as well, which is, of course, the entire cultural backdrop to this type of freedom requires a philosophical revolution, which Amalek all along has always been the ones to provide. It provides for that freedom. It provides for that doubt. It provides for the end of worries about morality and for the ability to reconstruct history in a way that allows you to do what you want with it. And so, as he's feeling really good about things, so as the Gemara puts it, this is the Medrash says katov. Remember the kishevet hamelach achashverosh? Katov levana. What do you mean katov? So as the Medrash points out, you know what? The truth is, they're never really happy. That's the point. It's like that beautiful Medrash. It's the beautiful Medrash, and it's the beautiful Gemara, the Gemara which Rabbah has called him, you know, into this Roman guy. And he's got this beautiful swimming pool surrounded by these naked women that are crawling all over him. He's got, the most unbelievable kind of things. He turns to Rabbah and says, come on, does God have anything better in Olam Haba? I mean, it doesn't get better than this. You know the old story. It doesn't get better than this. So he says, oh, but it does, you see, because you don't really enjoy yourself. You're always worried about the vice squad, aren't you? Me? The guy says, worried about the vice squad. And at that moment, woo! They drag him away. And as they're dragging him out, the guy says to Rabbi, he says, you know, anyone who would wish you guys bad should, his eyes should just pop out. Of course, the guy's eyes pop out. But that's the beautiful story. And it's exactly this. Katov, The katov, they always attempt to be happy, but it's never really that real happiness. So it's tova ve'ino tova. Because it's tov lo yiyel rasha. You never fully enjoy yourself. Masha'en came by the binyan of the Beis HaMikdash, the opposite of this, where Shlomo HaMelech now brings everybody together. There it says, vayachula ol haleihem, which of course is also a remnant to the same sexual issues of ol haleihem, smechim v'tovei leva, that it's full tova, al kol ha-tova asher, all of the things which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Yisrael in that creation of the Beit HaMikdash. And again, it's remarkable, but that's what Chazal say. From the time of the destruction of Beit HaMikdash, there's no fun in sex. Nitzlat ta'am biyah, v'nitzlat le'ba'alei avera. The only people who have any kind of pleasure, but there's no type of serious enjoyment of relationship. And all of that, Merum is here, as we come to the discussion of the Binyan, or the Churban of the Beit HaMikdash. And so he's mitzvah them, says the Gemara, why did he come to this? Well, you know, this is exactly what happens in a typical party. So the Goyim have a party. What are they? Yisrael has a party. They're Ochlim, they're Shotim. They start speaking Divrei Torah, Divrei Tishbachos, say a little Purim Torah, say funny things, but it all revolves around Psukim and interesting things, right? You've all seen this. But of Deko Chavim, Shochlim, Shotim, what do they start talking about? Girls, sex, what else is there to talk about? And that's Pisudas HaShalos HaRosh. It's exactly what they started talking about. So everybody starts discussing the girls back home. All right, so the Madiot are saying, nothing like the Madiot girls. The Parsiot say, the Parsim say, the Parsiot are much pure, beautiful. And Achashverosh says, you guys ain't seen nothing yet.
Is this a Beach Boys song?
This is unbelievable. You can sing.
No, I'm sorry.
Right? So Achashverosh says, you guys ain't seen nothing yet. You got to see my playgirl. That's what he says. Klishani mishtamesh. You got to see my playgirl. Not Madai, not Parsai, Kastite. Would you like to see her? Oh, yeah, but you know, when you say see her, we got to really see her. Absolutely. Bring her out naked, he says. Let's take her out. And that is the introduction to the Katov Leva Melach Bayan. You see why we call it Katov. And so he sends them to bring her in. Not, but she's invited to come. Send the boys to bring her in. Lahaviet Vashti Amalka, Lifnei HaMelech, Beketer Malchut. Only Beketer Malchut. Which is quite a show. And of course, it is right then and there the greatest possible bizoyan from Malchut Bavel imaginable. If they hadn't killed Vashti, it would have been the end of the chashivas of where she was coming from, and that was the purpose. She was ready to start a new world where it revolves around her, not the constrained little old Queen Vashti Victoria. No more of that stuff. Oh no. The Victorian age has come to an end. It's time for the Vashti years. Diana, they called her. He wanted everybody, all of the nations on earth, Miss Universe. And she absolutely refused, to which the Gemara says, why? Shneihem ledvar avera nitkavnu. That's what they wanted. And that's why we have this, or it was certainly something it violated. The fact that she wouldn't come was a complete violation of the natural order. That's the point that the Gemara is making. There's absolutely no way to understand this except as something outrageously ridiculous that would have made it impossible for her to come. That was the depth of her commitment to the very plan of Achashverosh. Vayiktsof HaMelech Me'od V'chamato Ba'arabo. As the Gemara says, I mean, you know, she could have excused it. She could have said, no, it's not nice, whatever. But no, what did she? So why was he so angry? Because what she did was, she sent him a public message, which went, dear Mr. Stableboy of my grandfather. My grandfather, you will recall from Daniel, Lekobol Alpha Chamra Shati. This is what Daniel writes about him. There he was drinking as much wine as the other thousand. For every thousand people, he drank as much as the rest of them. And nonetheless, it didn't affect him. And you are a nut. You can't hold your drink publicly. Miad v'chamato ba'arabo. So now, and this, of course, we find this commonly. This is the same story as Amnon v'Tamar. The moment you've taken away the sexual component, in this case with this crazy, you know, tail or whatever it is. But the moment you've taken that away, you restore a level of sanity that is overly sane, in which the very fact that you need it so badly seeks vengeance, so that Amnon wants to kill for the fact that he needed. She wants to kill for the fact that she was ready to come. She wants to take him apart, which is, of course, exactly what she does here. And so we have arrived at the moment for the end of Bavel, as the Gemara points out so beautifully. Every last element of Bavel, and that is the main point of the entire parak, every last element of Bavel comes to an abrupt end with the end of Vashti. And that's the reason why the placement of Vashti here is so central, actually even the name of Vashti. First of all, Vashti comes, there's two words that are very fundamentally Vashti-like. One is Shat, which of course is the basis of Shet, the whole idea of the development of Malchus Yisrael, in which everything comes from the replacement of Hevel with Shet, so that which is absolutely founded is Shet, but also the warp of the Malchut is Shti. So that Shet is always the source of the word for two. And the entire idea of the warp and the web is actually the thickness of the threads and the strength of the material is seen as a function of the warp of things. I'll just say that we actually use that in English, so that the masculinity, which is the shuttle, which is the weft, which actually is a story in the Gemara in which one of the Tanoim was challenged. He was pretending to be a weaver. So they presented him with the Erev and the Shati, saying, okay, if you're a weaver, tell us which one is which. And so a queen bee settled on the warp, and a male settled on the web. He said, well, it's very simple. So is min hashamayim. So it's the femininity and the masculinity of it is merumez over here in the actual shame, Vashti. And this was a malchut, therefore, that had been miuseded. That was all that was left of Malchut Bavel. It was she who carried it over, and as we saw, she who was willing to give it all up. And if you take a look at the Gilbert and Sullivan elements that really begin to come out over here, I mean, the whole insane story of the way in which they were going to send out these letters and everything that changed from this point, much of the satire of the Megillah is actually aimed, and the Gemara points this out in subtle ways, is actually aimed at contrasting the nature of a malchus, which was hamolech, that is, a malchus that is self-created in the sense of politics, with true malchut. And fascinatingly, one of the most fundamental contrasts is the search for a beautiful girl for the king. It's unbelievable. As the Gemara puts out, the difference between the search for Esther by Achashverosh and the search for Avishag HaShunanit by David, it actually brings out the way in which what appears to be on the surface the same thing is absolute opposites. And it's important for us to see this because we'll go through it and recognize the importance. But once again, it means it's a subtle hint to the centrality of the relationship of men and women, which goes through the entire nature of the Megillah. And as we pointed out, one of the most singular issues that come about through Purim is that it's essentially a women's lib holiday. What's that?
Women hate this.
That's part of the reason why. We'll get back to that. Women generally hate Purim, it's true. But what it is, it's actually the complete, the part of the Nahapohu is the complete reversal of what began as the rape of Esther, really, with the rape of Achashverosh, in which she does whatever she wants with him and reduces him, really, to pygmy status, which is also brought out in hilarious ways. I mean, in the literary fashion, it's brought in hilarious ways, in which the tones of his speech are suddenly, you know, turned on and off by a look from Esther. One of the most beautiful is later on when we get to the point where Emma comes storming into the room, screaming about the casualty figures, you know. Esther, do you realize that in Shushan alone the Jews have murdered all of these? Is there anything else, dear, that I can do for you? That's the end of the buzzing. What else would you like us to do? So that the only thing that changes is you can see her turning to look at him. Yes, dear. So that it's an amazing story. Even on that simple Gilbert and Sullivan level, it's an amazing story. But it opens up to us a lot of the issues of Malchus, and obviously, as we've pointed out many times, the transition of the entire Malchus Yisrael that goes through Avishag HaShunami. There's no other way to proceed with the transference of the Malchus. And so at the very moment in which there's a determination of whether it's Adoniyahu or whether it's Shlomo is going to be king, the story revolves around the fact, the weirdest thing, that David is old and Avishag HaShunami is sitting on his lap and he has to prove his virility at the same time that he's giving over that whole wild story in the Gemara, this insane test of virility, in between the time in which Natan HaNavi is coming in, he's going out to tell Adoniyahu. That means that this issue is truly central, and that gives the focus to Achashverosh's obvious loss of virility, which we'll see, that comes as being central to the contrast of his ability to actually run the country. And what happens over here is a series of beautiful, beautiful, says Rabbi Ariel, goes through a series of some beautiful, beautiful contrasts. Again, very satiric in the way in which we use exactly the same language for Shlomo HaMelech, or some of them he doesn't bring, but David HaMelech, which is as the Gemara points out, and the actual words that appear by Achashverosh, and each time it's an unbelievable contrast, in which over here he's showing off exactly the same. The Asa Mishte L'chol Sarav Avadav appears by Shlomo, after the yeshiva Vayeshev Shlomo Kisei Hashem L'melech. And this is Yamim Rabim over there. He has the dream in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Since you didn't ask for Yamim Rabim, it's really weird. And then he's Baharotet Osher Kavod Malchuto. And in the dream, God says to Shlomo, since you didn't ask for Osher, the power of the Malchut. And he has to go with the Gilulei Kesev. And here we have also all these Shira Shirim references, Bamish word for word. Amudav Vasakesev, it turns to the Beis HaMikdash, Repidato Zahav, Merkavo Argaman, the Kiyad HaMelech appears in both of them. Kichen Yisad HaMelech is contrasted with the Yisod of HaMelech David Ushmoel Haro'eh Bemunatam in terms of the binyan of the Beis HaMikdash. And then we have the massive impact that his Malchus has across the world because of Asher Shamu at the Va. That's the way in here too, Nishma Pitgam HaMelech, in which he's trying to create that kind of situation. And we have even the words Vaitzof HaMelech Mod, V'chamatel Boarobo, in terms of the Shteizonot, all kinds of very, very strange contrasts. So that part of what it is that the Megillah is trying to do is to give us insight into the transition into political Malchus and the implications of that political Malchus for Yisrael. One of the most satiric aspects of that appears here, in which Vayomer HaMelech LeChachamim Yodei Ha'itim Kichein Devar HaMelech Lifnei Kol Yodei Dat Vadin. This, of course, is a very law-abiding king, and he would never do anything that in any way was against the law. I mean, as the Medrash points out, Midat Tovai Tabato Ish Shelo Hayao said Davar Achinim Lach, would always ask the advisory council. And so, according to the Gemara, he actually attempted to involve the Chachamim Yodei Ha'itim in terms of the Chachomim. So this is the Chachmei HaTorah, Yodei Ha'itim Sheyodim La'aber Shanim V'Chadashim. And they recognized that this was an attempt to involve them, which they couldn't possibly win. Because whatever they would say would be obviously used against them. If they say to assert the Kvod HaMalchut over Vashti, then it'll be the Jews' fault that Vashti was killed when he settled down. If, in fact, they tell him not to do anything about it, then it will be clear that they're destroying the Malchut. And so we have here a king who is law-abiding, who in a short time is ready to hand over an entire nation to genocide in the course of a cocktail party, not only without asking anybody, but simply under the table. So that, as the Medrash puts it, lahi chazirta, to that little chazir, everything was done with el kedat vadin, of course. But when it came to an umma shlema, that is kodesh la'ashem, then it was casual. So this is too part of the satire. You see where legalities lead a Hitler. V'hakarove lav karshena sheitar admata tarshish meres marsenai memuchan. And all those who were close to him. Now, it's silly in a way for us to listen to these names, because we couldn't care less. I mean, his names are not the type of names that mean anything to us. They have no particular historical meaning. They don't come up again. And because of that, Chazal view the entire issue as references that are more or less esoteric, on the simplest level, the way that the Gemara sees it is that this is once again a discussion about the nature of the Beit HaMikdash. So that each one of these words, kol ha-pasuk hazeh shema korbanot nemru. But before we point that out, let's take a look at the other meaning of l'chachamim yodei ha'itim. Because one way of recognizing what that means is that we're talking about the times of London. Yodei ha'itim means the spin artists, basically. So these are the equivalent of those who would be at the editorial desk. So these were the ones who would be giving the spin. You'll notice that v'chamato bo'ara bo, which means that it was internalized. He was smart enough not to expose the extent at which he had been completely demolished by what had just happened. And remember, this would have been the equivalent, in modern terms, of the Kennedy moment in which everybody is waiting for Jacqueline to come walking. Here's the moment of the coronation, so to speak. He's right there at the inauguration. And they bring up Mrs. Kennedy, the beautiful Mrs. Kennedy, the beautiful Vashti, and she grabs the mic and says, "He's a wife abuser! The man is terrible! Help me, help me!" That's exactly what happened over here. That would have completely destroyed any possibility. He was in a horrific situation, having just been the man of the people, opening up the White House, having everybody come and see the bedrooms, walk into the chutzner, take a look in the gina. And this is the guy who's going to be la'asot kiritzon ish v'ish, just to make you all happy, my wonderful people. And all of a sudden, it turns out he's about to murder his wife. And that what was meant to be this fantastic moment of the new revolutionary Shushan Habira sexual freedom, in which the queen comes in stark naked wearing her little Playboy crown, instead now completely destroys all of what it is that he had planned. So he's in terrible shape. The only thing that he can do is put a spin on it. And otherwise, he's finished. And so he calls them. And therefore, in a sense, what we are about to read is a spin. That's all that it is. It's a different spin. So this is basically the Malachi Hashoreis that are speaking. So they are saying, according to the Gemara, well, Kar Shana, did they ever bring Karim B'nai Shana to you, these goyim? Was there ever a Karbonis that they brought? Keder Shekrivu Yisrael? Sheitar, did they ever bring Shtei Torim on the Mizbeach? Never, huh? Admata, nu, did they build a Mizbach Adama Lefanecha? Never. Tarshish. Oh, those are the big day kuhuna. Tarshish, Shoham, V'yashpa. Meres, Marsana, Klum, Mirsu. Did they now mix the dam, Menachais? Memulchan means, were they ever making the Shulchan? Lefanecha. And of course, there's the other element of Memulchan, which gives us insight into the entire nature of the Megillah. And this is one of the most important aspects that Chazal indicate to us as a key, that Memulchan means Haman. Why is he called Memulchan? Because he's Mulchan Lepuranut. Okay, it sounds like a cute play on words, until you realize that Rashi's definition of what is the meaning of the man in the Midbar, manhu, is hachanat ochlin. Man means muhan. That's what the word means. The central aspect of the din of man, anybody who's learned Masechet Beitzah knows, there's one halacha more than everything else, hachana. That is the din of all of the issues. Things have to be what you're allowed to do on Yontif for Shabbos and Shabbos Bechin, Lechol, Yontif. All of these issues is hachana deraba, built on the man. All about the man. And when you recognize that what we're talking about over here is the recreation of Kabbalat Torah, where the original Torah, as the Gemara puts it, is Lo Nitna Torah. The original Torah was only given Lo Ochlei Haman. That's true, the second one too. Lo Ochlei Haman. But it sounds like a joke until you realize what was the last day of the eating of the man? The day of the Hakrav HaSa'omer when they came into Eretz Yisrael. What day was Haman hung? The day of the Hakrav HaSa'omer, right after Pesach. Right? So they both ended the same day. They have the same name, the same double meaning of Hakana. This is not a small issue. So what it is that Chazal see is the concept of Mimuchan, in the sense of Muchan HaPuranut, is central to understanding the nature of the V'nahafuchu. That's the essence of the Megillah. Because basically, what happens to this Haman is that it's not that he's a setup, it's that he sets himself up. And that is what is so beautiful about the Megillah. There isn't a thing that Haman does from this moment on that isn't absolutely central to his defeat. Had he missed any one of those ingredients, we never would have had a Purim. And it starts here. He needs to allow the king to act precipitously. Yetzei dvar malchut milfanav. Forget about going to the courts all the time. Of course, as he figures, is the one way to get Yisrael. It's also the one way to hang Haman on the spot. And everything that he does, even down to the very tree that he prepares for himself, asher hechin lo, hechin lo meaning for himself, as we'll see later on, even then, he puts Esther into the position by getting rid of Vashti, so that it can be given to L'Re'acha, or the L'Re'ah Tova Mimena, who turns out to be the one that defeats him. He puts Mordechai into the position of the one that the king is not going to be able to take care of, because he wants to make sure that he never hears about it, so that when he does, it's a disaster for him. At exactly the moment, and we're going to see throughout the book, it keeps on going. Why is that so important? Because it represents the essence of the idea of poor, the idea of randomness. The idea of randomness is that the poor reflects a world that is not mechanical. And what it is that Haman is attempting to do is to work things out mechanically. The problem is the law of unintended consequences. When you attempt to do things mechanically, very often it's simply used against you. And we're going to see that that is precisely the nature of the Nes of Purim, the aspect of Hester, Anochi Haster Astir, the reason why the loss of Nisim is what is celebrated on Purim. It's all because of the nature of a post-Newtonian world in which the idea of cause and effect, mechanical cause and effect, is not only not important, but sometimes becomes a joke, in which the very buttons that you're pressing become the buttons that you're being making for yourself. Of course, we see this all the time in life, but never so hilariously, except for the people who are very well aware of the insanity of their own lives. Most people aren't. They can't laugh at themselves enough. But those who have a really good sense of humor are always living in Purim, because they constantly see how they've undone themselves. All of the things that happen are always part of B'mulcha. So that in that sense, everybody is a Haman, in whatever level they're Shayach to Ra. They totally create the very things that destroy them. So the Bor Kara, Yipolbo, you dig a pit, you fall into that pit in the end. So this becomes now the hint as to the nature of Haman, and it's the Malachi Asharis' slant on the names of the people that are going to be asked, Kedat, oh yes, Kedat, as the Medrash puts it, L'chazirta Kedat, yes indeed. It has to be, of course, precisely the correct thing. Malasot b'malka vashti, al asher lo asetat ma'amar ha-melech Achashverosh b'yad ha-sarisim, for her not having responded to King Achashverosh. And so Memuchan has got himself a real challenge, because it's very difficult to recover from this. I mean, what's he going to say? Is he going to say, well, you know, you had every right to tell her to appear stark naked in the middle of the Sudan. You were dead drunk, and therefore, you know, I mean, what's she going to say? There's only one possibility, and it was a possibility that was actually used by an American presidential candidate, remarkably, and that was Dan Quayle. He actually used this, and he decided that the biggest problem in the United States was family values, if you'll remember. And therefore it was Murphy Brown. Murphy Brown was the country's biggest problem. This actually happened. And this is exactly what Memuchan does. There's only one possible solution. That what Vashti has done is not an attack on you, obviously. That's the first thing he had, because he's the one who's looking like a total, you know. So it can't be an attack on him. It has to be an attack on the entire value system of society. And this is, obviously, it's a joke, and everybody there is smirking and holding their hand across their face. But that's part of Gilbert and Sullivan. And so what he says is, well, and once he says this, he knows nobody's going to, who's going to argue? How can you argue? He said the one thing that has made Achashverosh believe there's a way out of this mess, and of course has made him totally dependent on Memuchan, because nobody else is going to say something so idiotic. And so he pipes up and says, well, lo al ha-melech levado avta Vashti ha-malka. I mean, this is an absolute perversion. Ivut, it's not against you alone as an individual. Everyone standing in this room, ki al kol ha-sarim ve'al kol ha-amim, forget about this room, asher b'chol medinot ha-melech Achashverosh. This is a disaster. Why, the entire country has been shaken to its very foundation. You can see the guy up there in Gilbert and Sullivan. Sure. Right? I mean, he's really saying this. So, what are we going to do? I mean, look.
Make the
basically.
That's exactly what he says here. You'll see in a moment. That's exactly, he sings that song.
Ki yetzei devar hamalkal kol hanashim.
I mean, look, you think this is not going to get out? Yetzei devar, it's going to get out. The way the Medrash puts it, what? You think she needs to send out newspapers? There's somebody who's not going to know about this in the entire country?
So it's going to get out.
There's no way to squash this at this point.
And what's going to happen?
Oh, it's going to institute a new world indeed, but not the lovely Playboy world that you were interested in. It's going to be a world in which men look stupid. Bernstein Bear world. Do you want to have a Bernstein Bear world?
And so, Be'omram, what are they going to say? They're going to say, HaMelech HaChashverosh Amar Lahavi Et Vashti HaMalka Lefanav V'lo Va'a. She just didn't show up. Vayom hazeh. Tomar nasarot paras umadai asher shamu et dvar hamalka l'chol sarei hamelech.
I mean, this is not going to happen tomorrow, my friends. You're going to go home tonight, and they're going to know. And you're going to say, I want, and they're going to say, drop dead. Do you want this to happen in your home?
Uchedai bizayon v'ketzef.
Now, here is where we have Richie's song.
Yeah, I forgot how to start. Wait a second. And let the punishment fit the crime, the punishment fit the crime.
This is Kedai Gizayon Veketzef, says the Gemara. The punishment fits the crime. So the Ketzef that has been Yotze against the Malka, whatever it is clearly fits the incredible crime for this Bizayon. And of course, this is the deeper Bizayon. The way the Gemara puts it, or the Medrash puts it, is that the Bizayon, that her father was Mevaza the Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash, is sufficient for this type of Ketzef. Now, of course, another meaning of this is that he had to justify the fact that Ahasuerus got angry. One of the most important things would be to show that he remained completely unaffected. And that's the, yes, because if he was affected, then he's really ruined. So he attempted his best in terms of the ba'ara, chamato, ba'ara, bo. Bo means it was inside, it wasn't expressed. But whatever people did pick up as to his reaction needed to be covered. And therefore, part of the brilliance of Mamuchan is that he not only removes Ahasuerus as the object of this whole issue, which turns him into a laughingstock, turns the whole country into a laughingstock. Which, of course, is wonderful for Ahasuerus. But more importantly, he makes it appear that, of course, Ahasuerus' concern and response was Kedai the Ketzef for such a Bizayon. This is quite right. And what the king's response was a response of responsibility for the entire moral structure of our society. Imal HaMelech Tov, now I know this is difficult for you, Ahasuerus, but it's really important for the good of the country. Yetzei Dvar Malchut Bilefanav, and a Dvar Malchut, as the Medrash puts it, Adoni HaMelech, just say the word, and I will personally chop off her head. Enough with this business of coming to the courts all the time, always asking people's opinions. This is one particular moment in which it's got to be that you assert. Of course, this was the moment which was meant to be the assertion of the Malchut, but in a completely different way. And from here on, everything goes completely haywire. Because what was initially meant to be this open, trusting, and accessible king, from this point on, becomes an absolute raving maniac, in which it takes almost no time at all, a matter of a few years, and anybody who approaches the man is shot down in cold blood. That's how paranoid he is. He can't sleep at night. They've got to read to him everything that's been going on so he can figure out, okay, who's plotting? Who's at the door? What's going on? So he really is. He becomes Howard Hughes at the end of this story, understand? Not a guy that is someone that can trust anybody. And certainly the rape that follows, the government-sanctioned mass rape, is one indication of how completely haywire he's gone. And so it starts with, look, there's no way to avoid this. We've got to write this down, v'yikatev, b'datei parasu madai v'lo yavor. Our malchus requires the assertion of masculinity. It's the weft over the warp at this point. Asher lo tavo vashti lifnei ha-melech ha-chashverosh, u'malchuta yitein ha-melech liru'uta ha-tova mimena. One of the rare, powerful instances of the presence of history in the Megillah are these words. Because, as we shall see more of as we go, Esther is not just a girl.
Esther is the one who comes from exactly the same family. After all, she is the niece of Mordechai. And she comes from Shaul ben Kish. So she is a granddaughter of Shaul. The Gemara traces the abilities that she has directly back to Shaul and from there back to Ra. Shaul became also a raving maniac, completely paranoid. For the same reason, he attempted to control the Malchut. It's remarkable because the beginning, of course, was that he attempted to hide from the Malchut. And that has got to say something about the entire nature of power, and we'll get back to it as we go. But Shmuel comes to Shaul when he makes his first serious mistake, and it's all over. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the way that you handle this Amalek issue, of course this is exactly that issue, is it's over for you. You understand? It's over. What you should do right now is go out there and tell people. And Shaul says, no, please, just in public, don't do this to me. You come back. At least don't say it in public. It's true. I sinned. Finally, he gets to accept the fact that he's. And because of that, from that moment on, he goes downhill until he actually becomes literally insane, in which all of the conversations that he has with David is the two faces of Eve. I mean, there's completely different personalities that come out at different times, in which the love-hate relationship struggles within his mind and comes out in different ways at different moments. So he becomes totally paranoid and says exactly the same things. Who isn't telling me? Why does nobody care about me? Who is plotting against me? We have a spy amongst us. Classic. The words that Shmuel tells him are, your malchut, malchutcha, will be given l'reacha hatovimeh, will be given to the friend, which turns out to be David, who's better than you are. With exactly the same word, as the Gemara points out, exactly the same words, the malchut is given back to the family of Shaul in a moment that requires the destruction of the very person that Shaul created. Because as Chazal tell us, Shaul, after all, didn't want to kill Agag, the king of Amalek. I mean, he's a king. He's a great and cultured man. I mean, he's one of the world's greatest philosophers. I just could kill him. But, as the Gemara tells us again, that one night gave him a chance to impregnate Haman, basically. So Haman ha'agagi is from the king Agag, from the additional night that he was allowed to survive by Shaul. And it's Shaul's great-granddaughter who is the one that has to deal with what it is that Shaul failed to deal with. So these words, and it's amazing when you take just a phrase, and it can bring back hundreds of years of history with all of the pain that was involved in those early moments of the Shaul, Amalek, and David relationship, and bring it all back together again in exactly the same context. I mean, it's an extremely powerful pasuk. V'nishma pitgam hamelech asher yaseh bechol malchuto ki rabbi v'chol anashim yitnu yikar levaalehem lemigadol v'ad katan. So that we will now hear your words throughout the kingdom. And of course, this is a remez, as the Medrash puts it, to the words that are ultimately going to be heard, both Evel Gadol Yudim and Simcha V'Sason Yudim. That turns out to be the Pitkam HaMelech of HaMelech HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the idea, once again, is focused on women. Let all women give honor to their husbands, from the greatest to the small. Vayitav adavar b'nei HaMelech v'asarim, vayas HaMelech kidvar mimuchat. And so they thought this was a great solution. And this is, again, the Nishma Pidgam. What was the Pidgam of Melech Machay HaMelechim HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Mochan Ched, Zecher HaMalek. That's the Pidgam. And this was that big opportunity. And so, because of this, they wrote, Vayishlach Sevarim al kol medinot HaMelech. El medina u'medina kichtavav el am v'am kilashono. This was the revolution. And this is where Chazal say came the end of Bavel as a language. It was no longer the language of Malchut. The moment that Vashti, as the legitimization of the Malchut, was gone as the continuation of Bavel, so too was Loshon Kastit, so too was the Ktiva of Kastit, and instead you had simultaneous translation of a multicultural Malchus, which was something that was entirely new, a new creation on the earth, which led ultimately, almost directly, to the interrelationship with the development of democracy in Greece, which of course was that which took over very rapidly, in historical terms, this Malchus of Horas, defeated them, and became the source of the way we view Malchus today, which is exactly what was started here with the political party, literally, of Ahasuerus. And that's how it started. It started with a party, and it's never ended. So that the original smoke-filled room in the party of Ahasuerus, where everybody from all of the Malchiot was in attendance, ended with these absurd Sfarim sent out across the nation, Liot Kalish Sorer Vebeto, to allow every male to be the boss of his home. Can you imagine if you would get a letter like that to the U.S. government? Umidaber Kiloshon Amo, and speak the way you want to speak and forget about your damn in-laws. Now, basically, says the Gemara, if it hadn't been for these letters, Klal Yisrael would never have survived. Because this was the exposure to the entire country that Gilbert and Sullivan are running the kingdom. And therefore, when they saw that it's possible to give out this type of absurdity, I mean, it's literally hilarious. I mean, what would you think if you got a letter like that in the mail in all seriousness? This guy's crazy. And therefore, when the letters did go out, which would have indicated in a normal malchut that you can get away with murder, literally, when it comes to Jews, they weren't ready to take that very seriously either. Because who knows what's going on over there? Something strange is with this guy. And of course, his behavior from this point on made that strangeness pretty evident. And so we can call this parak basically the end of Bavel, but not simply the end of Bavel, but the end of Malchut as it had been up until then. The complete inversion of the destruction which we had, in which Nimrod had won, so to speak, when Bavel was able to destroy the Beit HaMikdash. And here Nimrod was again, this is literally what happened the first time Bavel won. The Dora HaFloga, language. Midaber Kelashon Amo, no more central language, no more Devarim HaChadim, no more central Malucha. Instead, the scattering, the big scattering. And here was the Mishloach Sfarim al kol medinot ha-melach, across, all over, and it even ends at the end of the Megillah, of course, Iyei Hayam, which is the Iyei Hagoyim at the time of Nimrod as well. So that what we have over here is a profound reconstruction of the original post-Bavel era in a completely new way, in a historical way, instead of a mythical way, in the prehistorical essence of the Noach period. And we have, for the first time, the opening of the differentiation of language as the beginning both of the dangers to Yisrael and the great opportunities for Yisrael. And we will see how Mr. Language, whose name was Bilshan, who was called Mordechai only after the name of the Babylonian god, Marduk. So that Mordechai is the classic non-Jewish name, believe it or not. Not Mordi, the Jewish name. It's another one of the strange ironies of history, that name is seen as Jewish. His actual name is, as we will see, is Petachia. And his Petachia was because of his ability to be a Bilshan, a language which until today means a linguist. Someone who can trace back languages. And this, says the Gemara, that was his kayach, that was his vision, and that's why, as we shall see, he chose to go to Bavel originally, even though he wasn't drawn there originally by Nebuchadnezzar and by the subsequent Goliath.